All right, so we have Sean Gillan, Ireland and Australia's strongest man, on with us. Good morning to you, Sean. How are you getting on?
Good. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Fantastic. Congratulations. Originally from Donegal, you've been in Australia now for, you've been in Australia since 2012.
Yes, that's correct, yeah. Moved out here just the end of 2012, so 11 years there the other day.
Right, so you know someone who, to become the strongest person, like, what were you like at 5 or 10 or 15? Like, is this something that you're there's a genetic gene that you have, or is this something that you just say, I want to do it, and you build yourself up and bulk up? How does that happen?
Oh, look, from a young age, like, strongman for me is only something that kind of, that I kind of started and kind of took seriously from 2019. Like, previous to that, growing up, just the usual sports, like played a bit of rugby through school. Actually, before I moved to Australia, I'd done a fair amount of cycling, which is, you know, quite the opposite to what I'm doing now. But yeah, look, just normal stuff kind of growing up, and then in and out of training. You know, I've always kind of enjoyed training to some aspect, and I've been in and out of it, you know, for years, different styles of training, different approaches. And I think 2019, I just kind of got bored of general strength and conditioning training, and I signed up for a novice strongman comp, and I'd done that, just enjoyed it, and it's kind of, yeah, the rest is history.
What part of Donegal are you from, Sean?
Kildare.
All right, yeah. No problem at all. Now, what did you have to do to win Australia's Strongest Man? Because there are different disciplines. Is it in particular categories, or what's the story?
Yeah, so Australia's not quite Australia's Strongest Man. I finished fifth there at Australia's this year. Look, there's different disciplines. I think, you know, strongman is probably one of them sports that everybody kind of knows of. But, you know, it's usually aired, World's Strongest Man is usually on TV at Christmas time and stuff. So everybody's kind of familiar, I suppose, with the standard strongman things, that, you know, the Atlas stones, the big round concrete balls that we're loading onto platforms. We got yoke carries, farmers walks, deadlifts, log press. A lot of different disciplines. There's quite a few, you know, and it depends on the competition and the promoter as to which will come up in front of you.
So say, for instance, in finishing fifth in the Australia's Strongest Man competition, which is a remarkable achievement, is that sort of like that you've some work to do, or is it how things go on the day? Do you know what that really elite level is? It, you know what I mean? Do you think, right, I need to go back to the drawing board and this is where I can improve, or could have things gone a little bit different on the day that could have seen you come out on top, Sean?
Yeah, look, there's always aspects of both. You know, you can always come away from any comp, any experience, with things you can improve on, and that'll make it better. But like, a lot of things come down to, you know, how things pan out on the day. You know, one little mistake, I think, with the lineup at Australia's Strongest this year was, you know, Australia's Strongest happens pretty early in the year. It's usually our second comp of the year. It's usually around March. The lineup was just, I think this year, the lineup was the best it's been in a long time with a high level of competition. So what was happening was one simple mistake, one, you know, bad move, and you would lose a lot of points and it would put you down the leaderboard. So look, I came away from Australia's Strongest Man with things to fix in my performance, different aspects to work on. And luckily enough, you know, I was able to go away, put my head down. The next competition for me then was another, it was a single event comp, which was a log lift Australian Championship. I'd done that, and that qualified me to go to the World Log Lift Championships in Southampton there while I was back. That was the 28th of October. So, like, yeah, I came away from that with, I won that obviously to qualify my spot to get to Southampton, and then I was able to come back, go to Southampton, and I was able to win in Southampton and set a new Irish log press national record. So I currently hold the national record at 200.4 kilos from floor to overhead.
Unbelievable stuff. Right, we were talking boxing with Jason Quigley just before the 11 o'clock news. And sort of with boxing, say you fight at middleweight, you sort of walk around maybe, you know, a stone over, and then you drill down to it and you have to watch what you eat. And I think people might see you 170-odd kg, 10,000 calories a day, that you can pretty much do what you want because of the, you know, the scale. But at a much greater weight and size, do you actually have to be really careful with what you consume, how you consume it, how that sort of works with your training and all that kind of stuff, Sean? Do you have to put in as much discipline as someone when it's easier for us to get our head around? I think, you know, someone operating in and around 12 stone, for an example.
Yeah, look, it's easy, I suppose, for everybody to consider that to be a challenge, you know, if you're trying to maintain a weight and stay within a thing. I think the other side of it that people don't get to understand is on this end of it, you know, anybody can probably consume 10,000 calories, you know, if you want to have McDonald's for lunch, KFC for dinner, and, you know, throw in a couple of pizzas and a bit of ice cream and there you are. But whenever you've got to maintain that number over periods of time, obviously eating like that, you got to take your health into consideration, and that's just not feasible. So like, there is a lot of discipline. There's a lot of rice, pasta, you know, beef, mince, chicken, veg, oats, a lot of carb heavy.
It's actually quite difficult to get that 10,000 of good calories into you then. I mean, you know, I'd imagine.
Very, very, very much so. Like, the 10,000 there would have been running through the latter end of comp season there. So pretty much what I've wrapped up in Ireland and the UK and Iceland there on that last trip through Europe, that's the end of my competing for this year. The next one for me is the end of January. So like, coming through that 10,000 calories, there is cheat meals in there per day. You know, there's, you know, half a cheesecake, a bit of ice cream, stuff like that, because once you split down like the macronutrients and stuff within the food, which, you know, I've got a nutrition coach that looks after all that for me, but there is an element of, right, we got to get to that 10,000 calories or you start to drop in body weight, performance will drop, strength will drop, mood, everything else, because it does take quite a high baseline of calories just to maintain.
Wow.
You know, and then you throw in the strenuous training and competing and traveling, and you just got to hit them numbers. So although 10,000 calories sounds like a dream to most people,
that's what I was saying. To figure out what it is, and you have to enjoy it too. I mean, you have to live. So can you give us an idea of what you might eat in a day, Sean? I know you've probably been asked this 1,000 times, but there's a good reason why you have, because it's bloody interesting. So what would you eat on an average day?
Yeah, so I, at the moment there, I've just, we've started a new diet plan running in and out of this kind of prep for the next comp. So like, perfect example, this morning, the morning starts at 5 in the morning. That starts with about 150 grams of oats, 50, 60 grams of blueberries, and then 4 whole eggs. So you'll have that, get some water, get some hydration, tablets and stuff in the morning. And then second breakfast at 7 o'clock, which is a protein kind of mass gainer shake. Get that down. 10 o'clock then will be 300 to 500 grams of rice and 200-300 grams of beef mince. So that'll be 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock. I have a snack at 3 o'clock, which is a 1,000-calorie cookie. And then 5 o'clock, I will, between 5 and 5:30, I'll have a pre-workout meal, which is usually 300 grams of protein yogurt, some blueberries, apple, banana, some rice cakes, peanut butter, something like that. Then I hit the gym. Usually through training, I'll consume another kind of 500 to 800 calories in kind of inter-workout shakes. Straight after gym, mass gainer protein shake, again, another kind of 600-700 calories. And then last meal of the day is usually, because at the moment I've literally just finished the training session, I'm just in the recovery room at the gym here talking to you. So like, for me now, it's pretty late, so I'll get home. Usually this meal will be cereal of choice, protein shake, some fruit. Look, it's in
what
there.
What a fascinating insight, Sean, because, you know, that's, as you quite rightly pointed out, and I think when you listed it, it gave us the real, that's work-like, because you say, right, I have to do this, I have to do that. You know what I mean? It's tough, and there's some mornings you probably don't want to eat all of that stuff that you have to eat. It's really, really remarkable, Sean, your commitment and what you're achieving. And finally, you know, you're on the other side of the world in Australia. Do you want to move back? Is it better to be on this side of the planet for competitions and your career? Because you're at your peak now at the moment, you know, early 30s, you know, you're winning, but you want to win more. Can you do that based in Australia, or do you have to have one eye and maybe coming on to the other side of the world to achieve all you want to achieve in the sport?
Yeah, look, very much so. That would be a plan for us. We do kind of intend to spend a bit of time in Ireland, just to be a bit closer to family, probably towards the second half of next year. And that'll definitely help, like, everything that I've worked towards and kind of getting into this position, like coming home, winning the World Loglift Championships, setting a new Irish record, winning Ireland's Strongest Man, going to Iceland, competing at the Magnus Classic, like all of them opportunities. You know, I've qualified for them here in Australia, but I think the next step for me now, which will be Britain's Strongest Man at the end of January, 27th of January, I think, from memory, that's the next big one for me. So that's going to require me to fly back again. That's definitely where I kind of position myself there and how the performance goes and what opens up from that. That'll probably sway me into, you know, making that call, whether we just, we pack up for a bit, come back to Ireland, spend a bit of time with family, and I'll put myself in a better position. You know, a lot of the top level competition would suit me to be back home in Ireland. It'll be a better base for me to kind of shoot back and forward to where I need to be. Obviously, traveling from Australia takes its toll on the body. It's quite a bit of a flight. So
yeah. And do you have to book two seats, or is that the for the trip? No, I don't mean it funny. But you're a big strong lad. Like, your one seat's grand on transatlantics, is it?
It's not ideal. In the ideal world, you would definitely book two seats. Now, I've been pretty lucky. The last few times I've been traveling, they've whenever I've asked, you know, how's the flight or whatever, they've kind of located me with a seat between me and the next person. I would say more for the comfort of the person potentially sitting beside me. But look, I've been pretty lucky in that sense. But definitely, it is, traveling is quite a challenge. To be honest, the domestic or I suppose the Ireland to UK style of flight is rather challenging.
I could just see you walking through arrivals with it still stuck to your backside. Come here, Sean. We just wanted to recognise your brilliant achievements, and we can keep an eye now on your career as it progresses. It's fantastic stuff. An amazing level of commitment from you. It really is. I'm blown away by what you have to do to be elite in that sport that you're at. And onwards and upwards too. Fantastic list of wins already, and it's only going to get better from here. So, Sean, thanks so much for chatting to us after your as you do your warm down. It's been lovely speaking to you, and we'll chat again and maybe get you in person next time you're home, if that's all right.
Hopefully we can time it a bit better the next time we come on and have a chat in person.
Brilliant, Sean. Thanks
for having me on.
No, it's our pleasure. Appreciate it. All right, brilliant stuff. Sean Gillan there, who is Ireland's Strongest Man. He was fifth in Australia's Strongest Man this year, seventh Australian Strongest International Pro Show 2023, third at the Chinese International Pro Strongman Championship, winner of Australia's Strongest Holzfäller Loglift, winner of the Magnus Classic Australia Qualifier, Irish Log Press record holder, 200.4 kg, winner of the SBD Loglift World Championships 2023, and he's currently Ireland's Strongest Man, and he's from Donegal, and hopefully he's coming home the last quarter of next year. Brendan Devaney, are you there?
I am, yes, Greg.
Oh, you are. Fantastic. Having some tech issues, so good you there. Right, okay. We'll talk about the DL debate in a moment, but just want to congratulate you and your family and your team on a fantastic event on Friday night. The last one for a while, I think you told me on Friday, but what a way to do it. It was brilliant, Brett. You're probably going to do it next year now, knowing you. But anyway, come here. Are you happy?
Greg, you probably like it's like a bad hangover when you say I'm never drinking again, then you remember the good times and not all the trouble. But you can probably hear from my voice. I'm still recovering a bit, but yeah, it was there's a lot of pressure on there, Greg. Yeah, so I don't know, it could be a long time in the future, but sure, we'll see what happens. But yeah, listen, the night itself went really well, and thanks yourself and all the crew there, Caroline, and everybody that came. And so many people helped out, and you know, whether it be donation or coming on the night or helped organise, it was a phenomenal effort.
Yeah, and it was, and there was something particularly nice about it, and it kind of reflective of your character. And I don't want to blow smoke, but you know yourself. But there was a family feel to it. Your family were there, right beside you. your family, the members of your family who are no longer with us were very personally remembered. Did you want it to be like that? Because as I say, it just felt really real and personal in all the positive ways, if that makes sense, Brendan.
Yeah, I just thought, great, from the last ball 2 years ago, you know, Dad and Margaret being there, you know, just had to, I suppose, give a word to them. And a lot of our family was there as well. So it was just that wee bit of remembrance we just put on at the start of the night. And Margaret, I suppose, got most of the prizes the last time out. She had a big input into it. And Al McCabe, of course, her friend and friend of family, and Helen Gibbons, and a lot of people got in around that as well and kind of took up that side of it. So it was just important to remember them on the night. And it was nice, I suppose, for us to be able to do that. And Alma put together a wee short clip, just a couple of images of the family together.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, well done to you. Now, let's talk about the DL debate tonight. Unfortunately, reflecting on heartbreak for Niamh Connell, they lost out in the last four to Glenn. You've got Brendan Kilcoyne and John Gilday on to discuss that game. I don't know, you've had such a weekend of it. How much of the game you got to see? Or maybe you were there, knowing you. I haven't a clue, Brendan. But, you know, Niamh Connell falling at the second last hurdle, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, well, I've been doing bits and pieces for streaming and different things, but because the game was on TV then, no, listen, Oisin was on the way. I could have went up to it, but I thought I'd be happy enough to watch it from the comfort of the couch. But yeah, listen, it was an enthralling game. I mean, these games, Greg, we're at a stage now where people talk about it's also football. It's, you know, people have wanted football, but the pitch was obviously in perfect condition, and it just comes down to such small margins, and there was never going to be anything more than a couple of points in it. Niamh Connell got off to a terrible start. I mean, it was 24 minutes before they scored. They were 4-0 down. And at that point, Greg, it was looking ominous because, you know, Glenn are Ulster champions. They were in the All-Ireland final. You know, they're certainly one of the best teams in Ireland. But again, this Niamh Connell team, there's just so much resolve. Suddenly they got a score. They reeled off three. You know, but then to the break, I think happy enough. And of course, they had the penalty at the start of the second half, John O'Malley's penalty. And they were supposed, and Martin Regan says this after the match, you know, they were just hanging in there with a team like Glenn. Glenn are so talented all over the pitch. And, you know, they've obviously Malachy Rourke and Ryan Porter, guys that are top county. I mean, any county in Ireland, Greg, would take those. I mean, the fact that Glenn are able to have the finances to pull them in, on top of all the talent that they have, it just makes them such an awesome machine. But listen, it came down to the tiniest of margins. They got AJ punched over that equaliser. And you thought at that point, Greg, it's going to extra time, because time was up. I think the ref said there was 30 seconds left to play. Niamh Connell, I think, had won the break of the ball out there, got turned over, and it came across to Big Bradley. And who else on the left foot? He's their free taker, Greg. And whenever it came to him in that position, I thought, bang, there it goes. It just all lined up. And tough on Niamh Connell, because they went into the game as massive underdogs, Greg, but yet it came down to that one point, and there was so little in it. Huge effort from all the lads. And
what do you take away from that, Brent? Because, you know, you don't want to hammer in, but then you lose by the narrowest of margins. How do you, if you're, or maybe by the time next season comes around, the pain will have eased somewhat, but what do you take away from that?
Yeah, I suppose every game is different. If you look at the Gowna game in the last year, very, very intriguing from a tactical point of view, the way Niamh Connell and Gowna played. Gowna just, and it's the different strategies and styles of teams and counties and the way they play. And Gowna just kept going at Niamh Connell had them in a brilliant place. They kept going at them. This was very different. This was much more tactical and keep ball and possession. You had so many talented players around the pitch. But Glenn did, put massive pressure on Niamh Connell all over the pitch and kept, you know, tackling them in different zones. So the work rate of the Glenn forward line was unbelievable. And I think in modern football, when you look at it, Greg, you know, talent is one thing, but certainly work rate and tactical setup is by far the most important things. Mm-hmm. I mean, the talent kind of works through that then, and you'll see the brilliance of certain players come shine then. But really, it's about 15 players that are completely committed all around the pitch, which it takes massive training and effort and S&C and all that. And that's what I'm saying about the backup of Glenn. And obviously, Niamh Connell matched them all the way on that. So you're like a mini county team now.
Yeah.
It used to be for years, Greg, the county teams were on different levels to clubs and all that now. And you're seeing the top clubs now have something of a mini version of what county teams are doing. And it takes some effort to do that, but Niamh Connell did it, and they can hold their heads up high because, you know, there was no shame in what happened there. Listen, as I say, a one-point defeat to, you know, the best team in Ulster, and certainly they are, you know, nobody's surprised if Glenn won All-Ireland this year.
Yeah, I'm all right. And you're also going to be previewing next weekend's Ulster Intermediate Hurling Final. It's a big one for Setanta. You've a big guest in Setanta's Gary McGettigan. They're hoping to become Ulster champions, of course. We hope they don't fall at the last hurdle, obviously, Brendan.
Yeah, last team standing now at senior level, I suppose, in terms of the competition.
Last team keeping you on the air, Brendan.
What?
Are they the last team keeping you on the air? Or
yeah. There we go. I keep the show going. Actually, you know, half of you is like, I wouldn't mind a wee break here, particularly after last weekend.
Yeah.
We'll see. There's always something to talk about, Greg. You
for
know
sure,
yourself.
Yeah. Especially but, with the chats you're having with people about their lives and stuff. But anyway, go ahead, Brent.
That's it. No, I hear you, Greg. But Gary's on. I've actually got good friends in Carrickmore with my job. I'll be up about there. So I've made a wee call. I'm chatting to a fella here, Michael Hatton, later. So we might get a wee bit of a word from the Carrickmore side.
Brilliant.
As well. But Gary, obviously, has been in some time with Setanta lately between being a manager. And now he's in the backroom team as well. So we just want to give them their respect and get the buzz. They've been on a brilliant journey through to this club final and an Ulster crown. As I say, they're the only Donegal side now that has a chance of winning that. So it'd be phenomenal for them to win it. I mean, that's a high grade, you know. It's a thing where Donegal club football weren't able to compete in for years, and now we have Setanta on the cusp of a possible Ulster victory.
All right,
so really
there's
looking
that,
forward to you, Gary.
Yep, there's that and so much more besides. A show not to be missed, of course, live after the 7 p.m. news, and you can listen to the DL debate or watch much of it in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Brendan, thanks so much as always. Great to have you back.
You're
on
great.
The great to be interviewing you. That's the way I like it. Let's keep it like that.
Yes.
All right, buddy.
Sort out them socks, my man.
Take care.
Greg, just before you go, it was lovely to get you up and get you on the corner a wee bit on the back. thanks, Steve. Thanks to your good self, Ashley.
But next time, ask me. We can pretend I didn't know about it. I'll give you better things to have a go at me at. All right, take care, Brent. Thanks so very much indeed. Yeah, indeed. I had a clue, but he dragged me up for a quick chat on Friday night too. As I say, a bit of preparation, but anyway. We answered a question about what Sean eats, and he told us there. As I say, huge commitment. You think, oh, well, you can eat whatever you like, but it's not really because it's margins. And Greg, would you say hello to Sean there? Tell him Mickey and Brendan said it was all the lifting, them Rockwool panels that made him stronger. Former workmates, I'd imagine. Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. On Monday Focus is on a new documentary series on TJ Cahir, focusing on Donegal Airport. It is to air from this Thursday, the 30th at 8 p.m. Helene Gallagher is owner of HG Productions, and joins us on the show now. Helene, a very good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Morning, Greg. I'm great, thanks, and thanks for having me on the show.
No, exciting, because this is a significant body of work here. A lot of effort has gone into this programme.
Yeah, so it's going to air on TG Cahir on Thursday at 8 p.m. It's called Air Fort Donegal. So it can be viewed. The great thing about TG Cahir is it can be viewed worldwide. So for any of our immigrants around the world, will be able to watch it. The crew spent over 2 years filming at Donegal Airport from 2020 to 2022. And basically, it tells a story of the airport through the passengers that fly in and out and the airport staff responsible for getting them from A to B. But I suppose the main thing which stands out for me about the airport is the vital thing is really it provides flights for patients availing of medical treatment in Dublin. So that's one of the key things that the airport does. Mary over in Niamh Pedrick in Gidor is fantastic. So she coordinates the flight. So if someone's ill and they need to go to Dublin for treatment, she coordinates all that. So that's a vital service. Otherwise, they'd be sitting on a bus for 5 hours after getting treatment in Dublin. So that's really important. The airport also provides reduced transport. I'm not sure if everybody will be aware of this, but for students going to college in Dublin, you can get cheaper flights as well. So there's lots of stuff that goes on over at Donegal Airport. It's an excellent service.
Yeah, and I think it hopefully brings to a wider audience the importance of having a facility like this in Donegal, because you know the detractors that will say, sure, it takes as long to get there as it does to get where you're going and all that kind of stuff. I think it really is important to have a project like this that highlights the importance of, you know, regional connections and particularly regional airports.
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, you know, we'd be traveling on a bus or driving for 4 or 5 hours to get to Dublin. Like Donegal Airport is our network you get to Dublin, then you're connected to the rest of the world. It's a really, really vital service for this part of the county. But it's not just as the airport, it's been voted 3 times in a row the most scenic landing strip in the world. And that is something to be extremely proud of. And that's where the idea came from. When the first year it was voted, I thought, oh, there's something in this, you know, the fact that it's not just a small regional airport, but it's been voted the most scenic landing strip in the world. And that's a great, an honour to be given that, and it's something we should all celebrate. But I think as well, what I found in making the programme, you know, there's some amazing characters, like, for example, Charlie Mack. He's a local taxi driver. And as a documentary maker, finding someone like Charlie is like finding like an Oscar, because Charlie's such a natural character. He's a brilliant storyteller, like many people in Donegal, you know. And he's, when you get off the plane, he's the person who'll take you to your next destination, you know. But there's private planes flying in and out of there over the summer. Like, people will just fly down from Dublin to maybe go and do a walk along Carrigfinn Beach, go for a swim, and then fly off again. It's like, you know, it's amazing.
But we get that insight because, you know, maybe locals will be familiar with certain planes coming in and out, but more broadly across the Northwest and beyond, we might not be familiar with the different types of traffic that use the airport. You know, it's not just one flight in and out a day.
Yeah, no, people can fly in. I think it's if you're flying in within Ireland, I think it's £20 or £25 to fly in within Ireland, and you just need to give them like 15 minutes notice. And if you're flying obviously from outside Ireland, you need to give them 24 hours notice. But yeah, so, you know, we'd be filming and next thing a plane just comes in, you know, and we've just popped in. It's the most scenic landing strip in the world. We've just flown in for a couple of hours. They go for a walk on the beach and then away they go. But over near where the airport is as well, it's absolutely stunning. There's the boat strand there and the Carrigfinn Beach. And, you know, when we were filming, we were talking about the different types of things people will try and bring on the plane with them. And people have a tendency to go and walk on the beach and pick up a stone and want to take it as hand luggage, but you can't take it because it's seen as an object that could be used, you know. Yeah. But yeah, so, and it's funny, like over the years when during filming, like you won't believe this, but like Metallica flew into Donegal Airport. Sarah Jessica Parker flies in, you know, and of course Daniel O'Donnell's a regular there, and Paddy Bonner. And the flight also, the Glasgow flight, it's not on at the moment, but that will be coming back on. And that's a huge thing. There's a huge connection between Donegal and Glasgow. So to have that flight within an hour, you've gone from Donegal to the centre of Glasgow.
And I think what interests me too is when I watch programmes like this, the bits that interest me is, you know, we see the facade, you know, the front of the building, the desks, the stairs, the plane, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you don't see what's going on behind the scenes, or how it's run, or what's involved in that side of things. And I presume, looking at the time frames, there's a bit of an adjustment had to go because of COVID and what have you as well. So we get an insight into that, do we, Helena?
Yes, we had this kind of stop and start filming due to COVID because of the restrictions. So you go behind the scenes and how that impacted the airport as well. And, you know, if you remember at a point, it was only, I think, one flight a day. And there was the worry that maybe, you know, and the airport staff talk about this, there was the worry that the airport might stop running altogether. So there was that worry during the pandemic. So, we look at that and how that, impacted. And, you know, on episode one, you know, there's a family, there's a gentleman who comes in from America, and it's his first time home in 2 years. And he was unable to come home for his father's funeral because of the pandemic. And that's really, really moving and will resonate with a lot of families in Ireland who were unable to attend funerals for loved ones. And actually, I cry every time I watch that bit when you see him reconnect with his family. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad, you know, but that was part of life for us in 2020 and 2021, you know.
Yeah.
So that's covered. And
so it's, you know, it's a four-parter. I presume there's threads that go throughout the four episodes or not. You can let me know. But there's also sort of four scenarios or stories or, you know, examples of the work of the airport. So is that how you've structured it?
Yeah, so it's four episodes. So throughout the whole series, we follow Cathal Blesby, who starts off, he'd done aviation at college in Dublin, and Cathal was at the airport as work experience. And then we follow him throughout his journey. And Cathal actually goes off to Spain to become an air traffic controller. And so we meet him in episode one as being there from college, getting work experience. In episode two, he's packing to head off to Spain to become an air traffic controller. In episode three, we meet him in Spain. And in episode four, he's back in Donegal Airport in his role as air traffic controller.
Wow.
Now, at the start, Cathal didn't want to be in the program at all. I had to really persuade him to be in it, but he's absolutely brilliant. But he's the only person that features throughout the whole series. And obviously you meet the airport staff who are throughout the series. But with regards to the people flying in, there's different things happening in each week. So in episode one, we meet Mairéadne Mooney of Alton, and she talks about how the airport enabled her to move back home to Donegal. She's absolutely brilliant, Mairéad. And I suppose for me too, having been lived away myself for 30 years and just I came home during the pandemic to make this and now I'm home permanently. You know, it's really strong in the Irish language. The Donegal Irish is just beautiful, and that's throughout the programme. And for people that don't speak it, there's obviously subtitles available. But Mairéad Mooney's in episode one and the Mulladoo band on St. Patrick's Day. And like they stop at all the houses of people. So that's in episode one, and the family from Gidor who are reconnected. In episode two, we talk about the vital medical, the flights for people availing of medical treatment in Dublin. And we follow a lady who talks about how it's assisted her. And we meet student Lee McGarvey, who's studying in Dublin. And she talks about how the cheap flights enable her to come home every weekend. She plays for Niamh Wara. You know, that's another thing, you know, the airport enables teams to come home and people to be able to play for the local GAA teams. If the airport wasn't there, they wouldn't be able to come home, and therefore the teams wouldn't be able to put a full team out on a Saturday or a Sunday. And episode three, it's a private planes. And we meet Grace Rogers from Tory Island. Now, I heard about this lady who flies in on a private plane from America. And I happened to be over in Mairorty one day filming, and I met this chap I know from Tory Island. And I said, you know, there's a lady who flies in from Tory. Would you know her? And you know yourself what it's like trying to get people to take part in programmes and stuff. And this gentleman, Patrick, who's a cousin of Grace's, so he gave me a contact for her. And I spoke to her daughter and I had a Zoom with her. And Grace is 85 and she lives in Washington, D.C. And she left Tory Island when she was 17 or 18 on the steamships from Cork. It's such a moving story. So I Zoomed Grace and I said, listen, Grace, I'm from Arranmore Island. My mother's from Inishree. My father's from Inishgera. I'm 100% Island blood like yourself. So that was sold her then. She said, okay, I'll do it. She's from Brilliant. Tory Island. And we initially were only going to film her when the private plane arrived in at Carrickfinn Airport. And then I said, well, is there any way we can come over to Mairorty with you? So we went to Mairorty, and needless to say, we ended up on the ferry out to Tory, and she walked us up through Tory to her house.
Story.
And it's just a really moving, beautiful story about her life. And it was one of the, you know, I'll never forget that.
Sounds like a four-parter on its own.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a TV series on Grace Rogers herself. And, you know, she flew in as well. We had a screening at the airport in August and she flew back in for the screening. So it was just really important that she was there. So that's in episode three. And also the Salt Festival, you know, in Donegal and Gidor, which is an amazing festival. People don't have to leave this county to go to Dublin to see gigs. There's amazing gigs happening here. You know, I went to see the Coronas a couple of weeks ago over in Gidor, but the Salt Festival, fantastic lineup. And what I think is outstanding about this festival is it's all run by volunteers, and any money made at the festival goes straight back into the community. So we followed people flying in from Dublin to attend that festival. Brilliant. So it's all kind of rock and roll. And then episode four is business people flying in and out. So it's a really good mix of people From all walks of life, all ages. So it covers everything. And there's that Donegal charm and storytelling within it as well.
Fantastic.
You know.
Funded by T.G. Cahir and Cumann na mBan. It is on Thursday, November 30th at 8 p.m. on T.G. Cahir and worldwide too on tgcahir.ie. Just a couple of comments for you before you go, if you don't mind, because this is the wonders of local regional radio. Hi, Greg. Helena is an amazing producer and fantastic at what she does. Wish her the best of luck. From Auntie Noreen, Rose and Elaine, we're so proud of you. And Helena sounded good on Highland Radio, Mary Jo, and a few more as well, which I'll get to later. Thank you so very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Bye-bye. Actually, we can go to line one and stay on this topic now. Rory, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Rory. How are you getting on?
Very good, Greg. How's it going there?
Good, good, good. Your experience of Donegal Airport?
We had an excellent experience of Donegal Airport. In fact, it was last Christmas time when my son and his partner had returned to Ireland from New York. They were here for a week's holiday over Christmas. But they left here on the 29th of December, Greg, at 6:30 a.m. in the morning to get the 5-8 flight back to Dublin for their connection on to New York. But that particular morning, it was the frostiest morning you could ever believe. And as they went out over Glenveagh, they were only able to do 20 and 30 miles an hour. And they definitely thought they were going to miss their flight. But they arrived there at about 7:45 in the morning. Now, bearing in mind, the flight was going at 5 to 5. They arrived at 7:45 and the flight was going at 7:55. And they rushed into the airport, and the staff and the guards there were 100% in getting them checked in, checked their bags in all the way through to New York, wow. Got them on the flight, and they left on schedule at 5:00 to 8:00. You know, you don't often
service.
Arrive at an airport at 10 minutes before your flight.
Wow, brilliant.
And that was excellent service, and what a fantastic amenity it is to have Donegal Airport. And, you know, the more people that use it, the more sustainable it becomes. So fair play to everybody involved.
Wonderful story, Roy. Thanks so very much indeed. I really do appreciate it. If you're on social media, I don't mind if it's Facebook, Instagram, X, or TikTok, wherever it might be. If you were on it at the weekend, you're bound to have come across a very nice video. It is a Christmas video, and it is for Charlie's Bar. And we're told, and you can see it in the video, there are no strangers at Charlie's Bar, only friends you haven't yet met. And that's a quote from W.B. Yeats. Una Burns manages Charlie's Bar and joins us now. Hi, Una.
Hello, how are you? Thank you very much for having me on this morning.
It's our pleasure. Now, talk to us about the thinking behind this video. I can't imagine you anticipated it would get the traction that it has. It's astonishing. It's absolutely everywhere. We could never calculate the views because it's been downloaded and shared on so many different platforms. But what was the thinking behind the video and the creation of it?
Yeah, we would share a lot of videos on our social media platforms anyway, but a lot of them would be quite lighthearted.
Mm.
And a friend of mine had texted me and said, would you not consider doing a Christmas advert? And that just got me thinking. And I suppose what I wanted in the Christmas advert was to portray what we see in Charlie's. And I wanted it to reflect Charlie's as a pub. And the one thing that stood out to me over the years, and particularly at Christmas time, is that it can be a really tough, lonely time for some people. And that's very much in contrast to what we see on the news and online sometimes, which is very joyful and happy. So we wanted to get that message across while also portraying the essence of what Charlie's is. It is a really welcoming place, as is Fermanagh and the people of Fermanagh and Enniskillen. So it was really to be a kind of gentle reminder to people that in the festive season, not everybody is as happy as it might seem, and just to be kind to people always.
So it tells the story of a gentleman. Well, you tell us the story, but he's lonely at Christmas, and as life sort of moves past him, people don't notice him, and that's kind of the emotion I'm getting when I'm watching it. And then, of course, he goes into Charlie's Bar, and all of a sudden, then he's not alone. Is that the story that you wanted to tell? Because I think it's really quite relatable. It's real, and I think that's why it's been so popular.
Yeah, that is exactly what we wanted to get across. And I have to say that Enniskillen people are very friendly, and it doesn't reflect what people are like here in that. But we wanted to reflect the wider image. And I've been guilty of myself walking up the street and you're on your phone, maybe looking at TikTok videos, and you don't maybe glance up. And there could be somebody that just a smile or a simple hello would go a long way towards. But we certainly never expected anything like the reaction that we've got. And I think one of the reasons we have got that reaction is because it is a universal message. You don't need to be from Inniskillen, you don't need to be familiar with Charlie's as a pub to really feel something or to take something from that video.
Yeah, and another thing that sort of resonated with me, you know, this gentleman and others are lucky to have Charlie's Bar, but it reminded me of the closure of rural pubs. You know, when people associate pubs with just going in and getting loaded or whatever, and don't consider how important they are or have been to the rural fabric, or an outlet for people like the star of this video, you know, to go in and socialise and chat about what's going on in the world in that given day. You know, pubs do play a really valuable role. And for some of our communities here, Una, they've been lost, which is really sad.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think for us, COVID really highlighted that.
Yeah.
You know, people depended on the pub, and a lot of people who were maybe living at home on their own came to the pub, and it might have been the only people they saw all day. So I think, as well as you say, unfortunately, we're losing a lot of them. And just to remind people that, you know, you don't need to come in and have a drink. And we consciously made the decision for the man, the main actor, to not actually be drinking. He was drinking a Guinness Zero. And there was two reasons for that. We didn't want to connect grief with, you know, alcohol.
Yeah, I get you.
But also to show people you can come in and have it. You're coming in for the social aspect, not for the alcohol.
Mm. And I think, too, it's almost like a metaphor. You know, you talked about that this not being a reflection on the people of Enniskillen, and of course it's not. But sometimes we can be surrounded by people and still feel alone. And that's what I see. Absolutely. In this character, if you know what I mean. As I say, I don't think it's the people of Enniskillen walking past me ignoring him. But, you know, they do say you don't have to be on your own to feel alone. And that's addressed when he goes in and has the pint and just starts chatting with the couple. I think the dog sort of being the instigator of that. And it's very real and natural. And it is what goes on. I'm sure you've seen this in the bar yourself.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked, where did the idea come from? And that's literally where it came from. It wasn't a groundbreaking idea. It's not. It's just something that you would see every day, and particularly around Christmas, where you find people coming in on their own more and more. And because me and my father would work on Christmas Day, that has always been a point, you know, really hits home with me. It's those days where they might be going home to a house on their own. There's no Christmas dinner there. And so at least if the pub's open, it's somewhere for them to spend a couple hours and chat to other people before they go back home.
Finally, I mean, all great actors in it, but the dog itself, I mean, he jumps up on the chair on cue. He sits there acting perfectly. Who owns that little rascal?
So the couple, Megan and Alex, are actually customers of the bar.
Right.
And I would know them to be in with the dog, Missy. So I'd asked them, would they be in the video with Missy? Because I just thought they were the perfect three.
Yes.
To do it. And they did it. They absolutely nailed it. So, yeah.
Brilliant. It's just had an amazing response. It must be so heartwarming, Una. It's great for business as well, but I know that's not your actual motivation necessarily as such. But people are comparing it with some of the best Christmas ads ever. It's genuinely touched people in a really real way, which is lovely.
Yeah, I always loved the John Lewis advert. It always stood out to me. And for me, it was the start of the Christmas season once I'd watched it. So to read headlines of people comparing it to that and saying that it's blowing John Lewis adverts out of the water, and John Lewis actually replied to it on TikTok last night. It just seems like phenomenal. It's hard to believe. We're a small family run business in Enniskillen. We never expected to get anything like this response.
Well, the bar's looking lovely as well, and really welcoming and warm and cosy. Listen, Una, well done. Thanks so much. And you've given people a wee lift, which is lovely as well. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. That is Una Byrne. Una Burns there, who's the manager at Charlie's Bar. We've linked that on our Facebook page as well. If you're not familiar with what we're talking about, maybe you're not on the socials, but it's just a beautiful wee video that shows people coming together at Christmas time, which is nice, or any time of the year for that matter. All right, Una, thank you for making yourself available. Let us see, heading towards the end of the show, time for a few comments here. Great service from Carrickfinn to Glasgow. Used it many times flying over to the Celtic Games. Brilliant interview with Helena Gallagher, a great lady. She comes across as such, yeah. Congratulations to Jessica, who represented Donegal and Ireland in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest at the weekend. She did a fantastic job, and I'm sure she did herself, her family, and all of us really, really proud. I didn't get to see that. It was a really busy weekend.
between the jigs and the reels, we were at Brendan. It's just one of those weekends. Brendan Devaney's thing on Friday. Obviously, I was relaxing watching the Katie Taylor fight on Saturday. And then last night we were in the Shandon Hotel for their Santa thing. It was lovely. Hudson got to meet Santa and he was really, really well behaved. Hudson's not three yet. He's heading towards three. He was, but it was getting late, close to his bedtime. You know what I mean? You know the way toddlers can be. And then Santa landed and just went pure quiet. He was fascinated and it was wonderful. And it was lovely to meet Santa and Mrs. Claus as well. And the whole place looked lovely and lovely staff too. So it's not an ad. I just want to credit where credit's due. The staff up there are lovely people as well. All right. Okay. That's where we have to leave it on the show. John Bresson's around the Northwest shortly from me. Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr and Shannon Wilkes. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9.